There are two things that are absolutely true. Grandma loves you, and she would never say no to McDonald's. So treat yourself to a Grandma McFlurry with your order today. It's what Grandma would want. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.
Welcome to Talk Farm to Me, a podcast that brings you closer to the power of your choices, one farmer at a time. This is the second best place to meet a farmer. Knowing a farmer in person is first, but you will know more all at once from being here now. It's for people like you who care about their personal and family health, saving the planet with real choices that actually have an impact, and building strong, thriving local and regional economies. And because of that, you want to better understand the lives and work of the farmers who contribute to important solutions and how they do that. It's a tall order, but we are up for it. I am your host, Dana DePrima. Didn't grow up on a farm, and I'm not really a farmer, but I've walked a step or two in a farmer's shoes in the last 15 years, on my accidental farm, and I know enough to lead us down this dusty farm road, you and me together, curious about what's going on and concerned about the future. Today, we have a heart-to-heart with Charity Epperson from Wild Things Ranch in Sonoma County, California. She raises specialty sheep, lamb, and pigs, where the health and wellness of her animals are of the highest priority, as well as maintaining the land by using regenerative processes. Charity was nominated anonymously for a Four Farmers grant when she was facing fencing issues and needed an extra financial boost. Charity lets us in on her story of her experience starting a ranch, essentially from scratch. This is no easy feat. And despite numerous inevitable obstacles, Charity has remained optimistic, emerging as a successful rancher.
My husband's family has owned their property going on almost 200 years now. They used to own the entire coastline. So I'm very fortunate in that respect to be able to do this because a lot of people, I mean, that upfront starting is really, really hard. We have our own difficulties just keeping the ranch, especially living in California. But I was able to start Wild Things Ranch in 2018. And I started really, really, really slow because I wasn't really sure because I already knew that going into ranching or farming business, there's so many upfront costs and it's just really hard to start. So when I finally was like, I'm going to do it. And I had a lot of criticism on the animals I chose because I didn't choose commercial breeds. Everyone out here is really big on commercial sheep. And I was like, nope, I have my heart set on those Icelandics. I'm not getting those. And so it's been working really great.
Icelandic sheep have a long history of over 1,100 years, being one of the world's oldest and purest breeds. Recognized for its meat, fiber, and milk production, this breed excels in various agricultural contexts. These sheep contribute high-quality meat and sought-after wool in various colors, white, black, brown, and gray, where their distinctive appearance is characterized by a unique dual-layered coat that sets them apart within the sheep community.
I have really strong values about making sure that everyone's rotated, the land's being taken care of, the fencing has been an ongoing thing. The land's been, like I said, with my husband's family for almost 200 years. And so the ranching kind of died with his mom. And so everything just kind of like fell apart and it falls apart fast. So I have just been like constantly just fencing project after fencing project. And then there's the predators that come along with that. So it's been an interesting journey. And that's why we kind of came up with Wild Things Ranch, because it's just been wild. Doing everything and learning and just living out so far where we live, because we're about 2 hours from the nearest city. And so when we go into town, it's normally like round trip 100 to 120 miles. So we're deep. So that's been a wild experience with livestock, trying to find vets and just people that are willing to come help. And then my day-to-day, I homeschool my son. So in the mornings, I homeschool him. Typically, it takes 2 to 3 hours, and then I have the business back-end stuff. And then we're headed out. So we're normally rotating sheep. The sheep take a lot of the time, I would say, more than the pigs. So we're normally rotating the sheep, rotating the pigs.
Sheep ranchers rotate their sheep to optimize grazing, prevent overgrazing, and ensure access to fresh forage. This practice promotes pasture health, reduces the risk of internal parasites and diseases, and enhances overall flock nutrition. Rotational grazing also contributes to sustainable land management, improves economic outcomes for ranchers, and fosters a healthier ecosystem through even manure distribution and resource conservation.
Explain what that entails to rotate your sheep and pigs.
We use electric netting. The pigs I actually just switched to a poly wire. It's more cost effective and the pigs actually stay in it.
When Charity says poly wire, I just want you to imagine one single string of electric fencing at the nose height of the pigs. They become trained to stay away from that one hot wire and basically don't need anything else.
So we have to take down the electric fencing, set up new electric fencing, and then we have to move the water troughs. And then we have a water tote that we use to fill the water troughs. So we are cleaning the water troughs too, and then moving minerals and filling minerals. And then we do the health checks on sheep pretty much every time we move. I think the rule of thumb with shepherds is, oh, you should do it like once every couple weeks, but I haven't had any major issues. And I think that's because I'm doing it pretty frequently. And then if we have time, we're on to a fencing project or a barn project. Last weekend, we had to fill in all the holes in the leaky barn and screw tin on because all the barns are made out of tin. And every couple of years, you just have to do that because the wind is so bad up here.
And when you're so far removed, 2 hours from a city, tell me what your community is like. And are there folks out there doing farming?
The ranches are big, but surprisingly, we're close. Like my nearest neighbor is less than 5 minutes from me, but they're not there very often. They actually live in town. And then my other neighbor is like 5 or 10 minutes, and they actually lease our property for their cattle. So I see them quite a bit. And we have family dinners and hang out a lot. So we see each other quite often, but we're also busy.
What about processing? Is that a real long way to go?
That is about an hour and a half. There are closer processors, but they're slammed packed. And I want to minimize how much the animals are being transferred. So normally they goes to the USA slaughter and then it gets transferred to another building and then it gets transferred to another building.
In a USDA-inspected slaughterhouse, animals typically pass through various areas, including receiving, holding pens, stunning, slaughter, processing, chilling, storage, inspection, and packaging. The specific layout varies, but the overall process involves stunning, processing, inspection, and preparation for distribution.
The place that I use, it's a little bit farther of a drive, but it's a one-stop shop. And they're actually local ranchers themselves, which is nice. So they understand keeping the animals calm and quality and cleanliness.
Tell me about your customer base. Like, who's buying your meat and how is it getting there?
Right now, Oregon and California has been most of my customer base. And we just started shipping, which is really nice. Before, it was just California and it was local because we were doing just whole animal, not the direct-to-consumer. But now that I'm doing direct-to-consumer, it's going farther, which is really exciting. I'm hoping to get a little bit farther than Oregon, but it's a process.
And explain how that works, what the transition was like from going from just whole animal to direct-to-consumer.
So the whole animal versus the direct consumer, there's a lot of stuff in there that people don't talk about, like finding your shipping materials and finding good shipping rates. And then because of where I live, I was going to have to drive the meat into town to be shipped, which I was like, oh my gosh, that's a huge added cost, especially with fuel costs the way it is right now.
There's a lot that goes into transporting goods from farms to their end destinations that we usually don't think about when shopping for our food in the supermarket. how far the farm is from the distributors, the size and weight of the products, gas prices, the type of packaging needed for transport, and so much more. All of this has to be factored into not only the price, but timing as well, to ensure the customer is getting the freshest product.
But luckily, I was able to work out with UPS that they actually pick up once a week from the ranch, which is super cool. But I feel like with the whole animal, there's the problem of having someone come out and do the slaughter. And then because I live so far, we're trying to find a mutual butcher that works for the customer. So the direct to consumer has been life-changing in that respect. There has been more hurdles with it and learning curves, but I like it better.
And whole animal was really for individual families that wanted to have a whole hog or have a whole lamb?
Mostly families. I would say actually a lot of single men, which was weird. They're just buying like whole animals. But yeah, I would say mostly people that are just wanting to buy bulk and stock up and have that freezer space. With the direct consumer, it's smaller. So the person doesn't have to worry about having that freezer space.
So what about your relationship with your customers? How are you keeping that up?
Well, so my family is really great at sharing. I think my mom's friends bought so much meat for me when I first started because they were so excited. Social media has helped, but word of mouth has been really big for me right now, which is really nice because social media is a whole animal. And I feel like it's constantly changing.
It's rough out there.
It is. So yeah, social media, email newsletter, I've been slowly building that up. I could probably do better on that end. I haven't been into TikTok yet.
So in terms of both the pork and the lamb, now I'm assuming that you're eating your own products as well. Are you the cook or your husband? Who's doing the cooking?
I would say we're like 50-50. He's actually way better cooked than I am. There's a joke, like when we first got together, I could not boil a pot of water. I would burn mac and cheese. And he's like, what is wrong with you? And I'm like, I can barbecue meat, but anything else, I'm not well versed. I've gotten better though. So yeah, I would say it's 50-50. He enjoys cooking. I enjoy it sometimes. So if he's like, oh, wow, I'll cook dinner, I'm like, cool. What Great. Are we having?
I'm interested a little bit more about your land. So the closest city is where?
It would be Santa Rosa. There's towns that are close to us, but they're very like blink and they're gone. There's not much. The nearest city with everything would be Santa Rosa. And our feed for our pigs, we drive all the way to Petaluma to get it, which is about almost 2 hours.
Curious then, so your sheep are out there and they're grazing. What's the common denominator on the forage out there?
So right now is when we're feeding hay because the grass has lost all of its nutrients. So normally like towards the end of August, it's gotten better. When I first started, I was having to feed at the beginning of July. Now I'm not feeding till the end of August, which is like huge just because we've done so much work on rotating the sheep and just keeping the ground covered and paying attention to all that. But yeah, right now we're feeding hay and we'll feed hay through March.
And so you think that your sheep have had an impact on the land?
Yeah, I do. It's funny because the property used to be sheep land out here where we live. Everyone had sheep. And then I think after World War II, it just kind of went away and it became cattle land. And out here, no one rotates cattle. The cattle just like kind of free range. And so there's no stopping them and controlling where they're grazing. So when I first got my sheep pasture, we built it. It was cattle land. It was very bare. So this year, I've seen like the most improvement. We had grass. I was like, oh my gosh, the grass is taller than the sheep. We're doing it. Something's working, you know, and just seeing the fact that we're able to push it past another month and a half than when it was before is just a good sign too. I'm also seeing wildlife come back. There is a pond like where the sheep pasture is, and we never had the geese in there. We have ducks nesting, so which is all really nice because we've blocked off a lot of that from cattle being able to go in there, and the sheep aren't able to actually go in there either because I've got the electric fencing from the grant. I'm able to control where they go and how close they are to the pond, which is really nice.
So you've mentioned some of the challenges that you've had. Obviously, fencing is one in terms of the learning curve with going direct to consumer and packaging materials and shipping. And you also mentioned predators. What other kinds of challenges are you experiencing on the ranch?
Predators have been a concern. I've been really diligent about making sure each group of sheep has a guard dog. So I haven't actually had any losses with the predators like some of my neighbors have been having, but the predators are out there. And one of the other things, and it goes along with fencing, that I've been having an issue with is the wild hogs. They are so destructive on fencing. They don't care if it's electric or permanent. They're tearing it up and they're going where they want. And just in the last couple months, I'm like, what am I going to do? The guard dogs have helped with that because they actually bark at them. But I'm not sure yet if they'll actually stop them from coming in, especially some of those wild boars with the big tusks. I don't know if the dogs would stop them from coming in or not. I would like to ship farther in the future, hopefully all over the U.S. But one of the big things I run into is getting my shipping materials out here. So there's a huge freight cost associated with that. And then just because of where we live, and then the dry ice, no one wants to bring dry ice out here. And it's hard just to find it in bulk in my area.
Dry ice is used when shipping sheep meat across the United States to maintain low temperatures and keep the meat frozen. Its extreme cold and sublimation properties help control temperatures, preserving freshness, extending shelf life, and ensuring regulatory compliance. Dry ice also provides insulation and is crucial for maintaining the quality of the meat during transportation over long distances.
These are the things that we don't think about from the consumer side, and I think it's important to share that so everybody can understand.
My mom visited over the summer, and she was like, I didn't realize like how much actually goes into all this, like how much money and how much time and energy goes into all this. She's like, this is crazy. No wonder why people aren't doing it as much.
And what inspired you to want to start farming?
So I grew up on a 3,200 acre preserve in Solano County. My mom was the ranger for there, but we also lived on the preserve. And then when she quit rangering for that organization, we still lived there. And so it was open to the public. Our house was kind of like smack dab in the middle. So we always had people looking over the fence, but it was also leased out to a cattle rancher. And so that was like my first experience seeing, I'm like, oh, real life cowboy. This is amazing. And I learned how to horseback ride and I went on like cattle drives with them and I started helping. And then we also had a friend that had a family ranch and it was a sheep ranch. And so I got to help on the sheep ranch when I was a kid. And I just thought it was so cool how simple the lifestyle was and how it was all, everything was in sync. I really liked the sync feeling, how the animals were with the land and the people that were caretaking the land and caretaking the animals. And I always just sat with me. And in 2018, I was just like, I wasn't happy with what I was doing. And I had always wanted to start a farm, but I had a lot of people saying, oh, don't do it. It's not worth it. It's 100% worth it. In my opinion, I mean, I'm tired and cranky some days, but I just went for it. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. What's the worst that's going to happen? I fail. I had a good time. Maybe I had some good laughs, good stories, but that was in 2018 and now it's 2024 and we're not stopping. I've hit every hurdle that everyone said was going to happen. I've hit it and I've faced it. I think that's what you have to do. You can't run from it. You just have to face it and come up with a new solution.
I think that you had mentioned to me some time ago that there were some issues bubbling up maybe politically in Sonoma County.
It's actually put on the back burner because enough people got mad about it. They were trying to change all the fencing. So it can only be like so many feet tall. You couldn't use barbed wire. Some areas couldn't have any fencing at all because it obstructed the view because we live on the coastal area. So a lot of people come through the area, but I don't live directly on the coast. So for people that were more inland, it was like, that doesn't make sense. And, you know, how are you going to keep bulls and cows and all these animals in with these fencing requirements? So right now it's being tabled and they're going back to the drawing board because there was a lot of other loopholes in it.
From where you sit, and obviously you're young and new to all of this, but very committed, What kind of thoughts do you have about the future of farming? I know you mentioned that it's a challenging job, and maybe that's why people don't go into it.
Even if I didn't have my own ranch, my husband's family ranch is always a big topic. My stomach gets upset anytime we talk about any of it, just because of how bad the taxes are and all the rules and regulations. There's always something else coming up and you're always having to stay on top of it. And we just recently went to a lawyer to talk about some of the taxes, and there was like all these other new things that popped up, and I'm like, well, wait, what? So it just seems like there's always something to worry about. There's always something you're fighting, and it is scary because, I mean, my goal is to hopefully pass something down onto my son, and I don't know what that looks like in the future for him, whether that be my ranching business or my husband's family ranch. It's so unknown.
And all of these regulations, the ones non-specifically that you're mentioning, are they farming unfriendly, or are they just trying to control things or change things?
For us personally, with where we live, it's more of the taxes. There's all these random taxes. So for instance, we have a new one that came out this year with the fire departments, and it's $100 per parcel. So even if you own a small amount of acreage, but you have it split up into different parcels, it's $100 per parcel. So for us, we're going to be paying an extra, I think, $1,500 a year on top of what we already pay.
In farming, the term parcel typically refers to a piece of land or a specific area of a farm that is used for cultivation or other agricultural activities. A parcel can vary in size and may be designated for growing crops, raising livestock, or carrying out specific agricultural practices. Farmers often divide their land into parcels to organize and manage different aspects of their operations effectively. The term is commonly used in the context of land management, agricultural planning, and zoning regulations.
So that's affecting some of the larger landowners out here that have had their properties forever. I know my neighbor, he's going to be paying an extra $3,500 for this tax. And the problem with the tax is they don't actually defend our area if there's like a town involved that actually has some capital, because we're not worth saving. So we're paying all this, but we don't actually benefit from it. And it's frustrating. Every year we're like, oh, cool. Another thing, like, how are we going to make sure this gets paid? So there's all sorts of things that go on with the taxes and like other like weird things. They want to regulate our, I think it was our spring water. And I'm like, well, how are you going to regulate the water that trickles out of the ground? I'm like, how are you going to regulate that? So yeah, there's just a bunch of different things that always pop up.
Charity Epperson and Wild Things Ranch received a Four Farmers grant in our second round of grant applications. She and her farm were one of 20 recipients selected by our grants panel from over 375 finalists. She applied for fencing that would cordon off a pond where lambs were at risk of getting stuck in the mud and drowning.
How did you feel when you found out you were nominated?
I cried, honestly. I was sitting on my couch. I'm like, oh, I'm probably not going to get it. Like, I never win anything. And then my husband's like, congratulations. And I was like, what? And he's all, congratulations, your name just got called. I was like, oh my goodness. You know? And of course it was during, I think it was right before my lambing season. So it's at the end of the hay season when everything's tight. There's not a bunch of wiggle room for anything. And so I was like, oh my gosh, this is such a saving grace. I don't have to worry about lambs. I don't have to be at like up all night or like double, triple checking, making sure no one's in the pond. Like, it was meant to be. I was like, I'm like, this was meant to be.
Wild Things Ranch is out there at the end of the earth where the wild things play. The wind, the distance, the unexpected regulations, the wild boar, and the wildness of Charity's own livestock. Charity has tamed this wild landscape to some extent, working to keep the unexpected at bay. Recently, in California's own wildness, the ranch took a hit, with trees falling on her boar pen and the wind ripping the roof off of her feed barn. Another day in the life for Charity. Remember that sink feeling that she loved, of how the rancher and the land and the animals were one? Sometimes Mother Nature decides you should all feel that sink a little more sharply. This has been another episode of Talk Farm to Me, the podcast that brings you closer to the power of your choices, one farmer at a time. Remember, this is the second best place to meet a farmer. Meeting one in person is first, but I do think that you will learn more from being here all at once. Since you are still here with me, can you do me a really helpful favor and share this with a friend? You can share this episode right from the app you're listening in, and you can also share the whole show and let them pick the episode that calls out to them most. Thank you for being here on the farm today, talking farm and filling our insatiable curiosity about what's going on with farmers so we can better understand and deconstruct our concerns about the future of food. Talk Farm to Me is produced by yours truly and Sonia Dillon, with original music and sound design by Russell Chapa. Don't forget to check the show notes for links and other important and amazing resources. See you soon, right around the corner, maybe at a farm near you.
There are two things that are absolutely true. Grandma loves you, and she would never say no to McDonald's. So treat yourself to a Grandma McFlurry with your order today. It's what Grandma would want. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.